Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome to Sports Day, 7 after 6. Mitch Marsh is going to join us shortly. Be great to have a chat to him. Really looking forward to sinking our teeth into what is going to be a big program here tonight. Paul Hazelby, there's so much news bubbling around. How are you?
I'm going well, Carl. We're going to start with Brad Shepherd because Mark Reddings and yourself have been strong on this in recent times, with the end coming towards its completion of his career, unfortunately due to concussion. And it seems that those meetings have taken place and that Brad Shepherd will retire from the West Coast Eagles. Very, very sad. Absolute brilliant career. But to go out like that, Carl, is never what you want to see in the game of AFL from a player that's shown so much great performances across his career.
Absolutely, but as I forecast the other day, I think when you've got so much more life to live, given that the average age of a male is around 80 these days, Hayes, he's only 30, he's still got 50 years of life to live, and it's important that you can do that safely and be able to use that full brain capacity that he's still got, even though he's had some issues. I believe that, you know, with rest and recuperation, that he will be able to live a normal and functional life, hopefully. So that's what we look forward to. Hey, mate, when it comes to some of the other news bubbling around, of course, so we've been speaking about Alex Carey. We know that that announcement was coming. Well, finally, it was confirmed this morning, as was WA to host 5 FIFA World Cup matches in 2023. And we've seen a fair bit of that rolled out throughout the course of the day.
Great news, but unfortunately, it doesn't look like the Matildas coming to Western Australia. So that is a big letdown, given how popular they have been in recent times. But still, to have the World Cup, I don't think we all appreciate how big that is. But we know how big the event is, particularly the men's, the women's competition has been growing, and to have that in our own backyard is absolutely massive. And the other big news, Carl, that I want to start with tonight is your tweet this morning. Mm-hmm. I woke up and you're talking about the Gabba test, which is due to start on the 8th. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at the forecast, the weather forecast, it's not looking good for the Gabba. And you suggested that maybe they could be agile, flexible, and make a quick change to have that moved here, which gets rid of some of the border control issues. It gets the WA test out of the road, and it means that then Brisbane can play later, particularly hoping that it's not going to be raining when
the weather, have you seen the weather out there
looks
in Brisbane?
Horrendous.
It's absolute crap, right? It is total rubbish. And what they're talking about to actually prepare a pitch, the curator, is actually building a tent.
Over the pitch.
Over the pitch to actually curate some sort of semblance of a wicket. Now, why the hell would you want to go through that sort of process? It's an easy and quick and simple fix, and we've got a venue here that is quite easily, I think, able to be capable of holding the event earlier, and I don't see why it can't be done. It seems logical to me to do it. What it does do is it saves Cricket Australia pouring any finances down the drain. Important because we're talking about England coming to town. And why would you want a test washed out pretty much completely by the looks of it? Why not just come here, get it done and dusted, and let's hope that in a few months' time, or in a month and a half's time, going back to January 15, that they'll be home and hosed. And they won't have any of the cross-border problems that they've currently got here in Western Australia. They could come in and out right now if they like.
How accurate are these forecasts? Because if you could tell me categorically that they will only get 2 days' play, then
matter?
I would say 100%.
Why do you need a categorical
because they've got,
weather
they've
forecast?
They've had ticket sales.
Well, that's okay. We'll just hold them over. I mean, how many times have you seen a sporting event in the last 2 years had to cancel the event, hold the tickets over, don't have to necessarily refund the money, you just hold it over, postpone it until January 15. All I have to do then is go from Sydney to Queensland, right, and play a game of cricket, mate. It's a 1 hour flight.
But they still could have some border restrictions there too,
why?
Queensland and Sydney, because they are still not 100% opened
up.
So there's that to consider. Pitches.
Yes.
The logistics of that.
Well, no, they're supposed to be open then in Queensland and New South Wales. So, no, that's I don't think that's correct. I think January 15, the Queensland and New South Wales border is expected to be open. Anyway, back to
your pitch. Okay, tick that one off.
Yep.
Pitches. How long do you need to prepare a test match wicket? Could you do that now?
Mate, of course. The pitches are in. Have you been out there and had a look at them?
Yeah, but is that a test match pitch? That would be for the big
pitch,
bash.
It's a pitch, mate. It's a pitch.
It doesn't matter?
Nah, it doesn't matter. Oh, do you want to get the curator on and
let
him tell
you? Well, that's for the Perth Scorchers to play out there.
That's fine, mate. It's fine. It's a cricket pitch. right? You just get the roller out, you just cut the grass, and away you go.
Get through. So how would it play, day four and five?
You've got a whole strip of wickets, right? You've got a whole strip of wickets. Well, it'll play like it normally plays.
Crowd here. We would get a good crowd.
Of course we would. And we've already sold tickets.
Probably a better crowd because it'll be the first.
So all of those people that have already bought tickets for January 15, all of their tickets would then get transferred forward to the first test. What is it? What date is it supposed to get underway? December 8th. Next week, right?
Six days
time. No problem.
No border issues. They can come straight in.
Yep, no problem. Yep, they
all
can.
All of them.
Well, they're in Queensland, aren't they?
Yep.
So they're clean. There's no problems. We can fly in and out of Queensland. They could easily abort what is currently in the fixture and come here, get it done, play it. It makes sense to me, mate. I mean, you talk about being fluid and flexible and all of these other things.
The AFL did.
Well,
Cricket Australia need to do it, maybe.
Cricket Australia, I think, have been in that they have had to restructure already other competitions. Let's give them the fairness here. They had to do it with the Women's Big Bash. They had to go down to Tasmania for a large block of that. And then when you think about the current Big Bash competition, they've had to refixture a couple of times. And we've had Alistair Dobson, who's been the main man running that. But this whole time through, the major sticking point has always been, it's not that the English cricket players couldn't come and play the game dirty, given there's only 5 days between the Sydney and Perth test. That's not the issue. The issue is that all of the others that are required to get the job done need to get into Western Australia for 14 days. And that includes the hierarchy. That includes anyone that is an official. That includes anyone who might be part of skeleton staff to run the competition, as the AFL did. They sent a skeleton staff. Now, I'm sure that we've got very capable people here in Western Australia that have worked in large events at the Wacker Ground. They could utilise the services of those that work at our AFL clubs who got involved for the AFL Grand Final. I mean, Kelly and the team at the Dockers did a fantastic job that day. And, you know, I worked in a couple of rooms on Grand Final day. There's no doubt that we can do it. The rugby as well, when we had New Zealand and Australia in the rugby, which I went along to, we can still get it done. But it's whether they are prepared, the hierarchy, to spend their 14 days quarantine, which means they would have to, in some cases, watch the test being played in Sydney in a hotel here in Perth. And I don't think that they're prepared to do that, mate. And I don't think they ever have been right from the start. They've been expecting to buckle and be allowed in the same as the English cricketers will be allowed in and the Australian cricketers allowed back to play the game of cricket.
Just going back to the transfer from the Gabba. The 8th scheduled is Perth Scorchers to take on Brisbane Heat.
Yep.
Their first match.
Yep.
So we just move that one.
Yeah.
Where does that one go? Just goes to Brisbane?
No, you just put it on the day earlier.
7th.
Yeah, you put it on the day before.
Switch around the broadcasters. A lot of money goes into broadcasting.
Mate, the broadcaster's already here. So that's all you have to do. Anyway, we're going to get to Mitch Marsh in a moment. I reckon he'd probably have an opinion on it. I hope he does. It's 6:15. Daniel in Dianella joins us. G'day, Daniel.
Oh, g'day, guys. Couldn't agree with you more, Carl, on the cricket arrangement. The main reason I was calling is, yet another one. Brad Shepherd. Young man. My prediction is for the legalities and what have you, in X number of years, everyone's going to be wearing the soft helmet, Phil Narkel style. What do you guys think?
Everybody says that, and concussion's a massive issue in our game, and we're still not at that point. And the reason we're not at that point is because the research and the evidence that is provided and is done on all contact sports around the world shows that they don't do anything. A concussion is the movement of the brain, and unfortunately, the helmet has been proven to not make any difference or minimal difference when there is a big collision.
So the main difference is that it might stop your cheekbone from fracturing, or it might stop your skull from fracturing in case of a head knock or your cheekbone breaking or your jaw. But the actual concussion and the brain rattle in American football, they all wear helmets. And you would have seen, Daniel, there was a massive case against the league or some years ago now. And there is also some action pending behind the scenes here in Australian rules as well for players that have been injured and have symptoms now. So, look, that is one of the things that we've had medical experts on this program before explaining to us, that it's the actual jarring and the rattling of the brain inside the skull that's causing minimising the damage, which might be reduced slightly by wearing a helmet, but certainly doesn't forbid it from actually happening. We've got to clear a break on the other side. 16 already, 17 after 6. Time flies. Mitch Marsh to join us next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Now, nice to have this man on the radio. Test cricket update for my place. You can't beat Australian smarts. Before we have a chat to him about test cricket, I wish he was in the team, but he's not. And before we talk to him about the Big Bash, which he's going to be involved in a few days' time, I want to ask him about maybe moving the test match to Western Australia and have a chat to him about that winning World Cup team that he played in, because we haven't had a chat to him, Hayes, since we caught up with him prior to that match. Mitch, how are you, mate?
Gents, I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, did you survive quarantine okay?
I did. Certainly not ideal to fly into quarantine after winning a World Cup, but... unfortunately, that's the world we live in these days, so had to be done.
Yeah, I hope you had a couple of quiet ones with the boys prior to that. But, mate, what do you reckon about flipping the test over here, mate? We've missed out the last couple of years. We've got perfect weather forecast over in Western Australia, even though it's a little bit windy. But the weather forecast over there in Brisbane is absolute crap, and we're talking about putting tents over the top of a wicket. Why can't they just be fluid and flexible, Cricket Australia, and just switch it over here?
Well, if it was up to me, we'd have all five tests in Perth. But unfortunately, it's not up to me and it's not up to us West Australians. But hopefully the weather holds up and we can get a test match in Brisbane.
Is it a dumb idea, though, Mitch, if there is the ability? We know that they can move freely in and out of Western Australia. We know the issues that are going to or have been ongoing between Cricket Australia and our state government for January 15. To me, mate, it seems like a marriage made in heaven.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't want to be making headlines asking Cricket Australia to move a test match from Brisbane to Perth a week out, but I think a lot of planning and everything goes into hosting these test matches for each state, so I think it would be a little bit stiff to move it all to Perth, but hey, I don't mind the idea.
Good answer, and you're learning. Now, what about the preparation of the pitch? We're just talking about the pitch that's currently there, ready for your first game of the Big Bash. Would there be one ready that could hold a test?
Yes.
Oh, probably, yeah. I think there'd probably be a bit in it, but that makes a good TV, so that's what we're all about.
Good call. Now, Mitch, everybody loves you in Australia. It must have been terrific to win the World Cup, and you played a massive part with that. Being left out of one of the games but coming back in and player of the finals, how enjoyable was that experience for you?
Oh, it was incredible. You know, the World Cup itself was, an amazing experience. You know, living in a bubble is not exactly easy, but the group that we had, the commitment we had from each other and to each other throughout the whole 6 weeks was just amazing. And, we had a slight hiccup against England with that loss, but I think that loss certainly put us on the right road towards the finals. And, to play the way we did in that final and to win a World Cup, to be the first Australian team ever to win the T20 World Cup, it's honestly an incredible feeling, guys.
I think that was the game you were left out for, so they learnt their lesson pretty quickly. But what about the love, the feeling of love from everybody in Australia? Because it hasn't always been there for you.
Yeah, look, it's been pretty incredible. Selfishly, I would have liked to have basked in the glory for a little bit longer than one night before going into quarantine and really lapped that up for a week or so. But unfortunately, had to go into quarantine. But I think the whole team, felt the love from Australia and really hoped that everyone was proud of our efforts in tough conditions in Dubai.
Hey, Mitch, both Carl and I were strong that you should have been included in that squad. I would have had you at number 6 and moved up Cam Green. How do you get back in? Because it's very difficult when you specialise like you do in the shorter formats to actually get that opportunity. Because once the scorches are done and the Sheffield Shield rolls back around, you could be very well playing with Australia again in those formats.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think I've only played one four-day game in probably 18 months, so it's always hard to get Red Bull form. I've got a great opportunity next week playing for Australia A, and ultimately if I score runs in that, you definitely put your name up for later on in the summer. 5 test matches is it's a long series, so you never know what could happen. But, JL has always spoken about form is form, and hopefully wherever I'm playing, for the Scorchers, for Western Australia, or for the white ball teams in Australia, if I can keep performing. There's been plenty of guys, you know, before me force their way in through white ball form. So, not giving up, but, I'm looking forward to watching a bit of the Ashes. It's going to be great.
Your poor teammate's in the same boat, isn't he, Josh Inglis? I mean, really, if he was back here playing some cricket, unfortunately, he didn't get a lot of work over there playing with you in the Australian team in the T20 tournament, mate. So, you know, Alex Carey gets a chance, makes that 100, and that probably just tipped him over the edge.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's they're both great mates of mine. Alex Carey's a fantastic cricketer and hell of a story from, you know, coming from GWS to where he is now, Australia's next test keeper. It's an amazing story. And obviously, Josh Inglis was really close. He's a super talent. I think he's going to have a long career playing for Australia when he gets his opportunity. He's the kind of guy that you love playing with. He gets in the contest and he's extremely skillful. So I think, yeah, they're both going to have plenty of opportunities to play for Australia, and looking forward to seeing it.
Now, what sort of captain will Pat Cummins be?
I think he's going to be a great captain. He's one of my best mates in Australia, in cricket, sorry. And he's just a great man. He's got great respect within the group. He's got a great cricket brain. There's been a lot of talk about can a bowler, a fast bowler, be captain. And honestly, I haven't bought into it once. He's going to do a great job for Australia. I bowled to him in the nets the other day and I gave him a few half volleys and no bounces, so hopefully that might get me a game soon.
Well, see, you're a bowler and you've captained a hell of a lot. And let's face it, he's only done, I think, one game prior to getting the opportunity here, and that was in white ball cricket for his home state. Where do you think he should field? Like, or does that not matter?
Well, he joked with me the other day that he hopes the Gabba's not too flat because he won't be bowling much if that's the case. So he's hasn't lost his sense of humour. But, I think often he fields at mid-on and mid-off. And I think that's a great spot for a captain and bowlers to field. As a captain, it's nice to stand there and be able to talk to your bowlers mid-over. And as a bowler, it's nice to have either your captain or another bowler to talk to when you're at mid-off and mid-on. So I dare say that's where he'll field. If he's got any sense, he'll probably slip in the first slip and then has to do nothing and just watches the game from first slip. But we'll see what happens.
Last night, Adam Boger spoke about Nick Hobson and he scored a good 90 yesterday. Cooper Connolly got added to the squad. Now, this kid, there's a big rap on him and his future. He's been with the under-17s. He's now with the under-19s. But he comes into the squad for the Perth Scorchers. Is he ready, in your opinion? And tell us a bit about him.
Yeah, look, he's a ripping young kid. 17 or 18 years of age. He's come through the ranks, as you said. Hits a clean ball for a young fella. And he bowls quite handy off spin. So I think that's, you know, to have a young guy like that around our squad, hopefully he's going to learn a lot. I'm sure if the opportunity arises, he'll take it on. It seems like all young kids these days, they're very confident and love having a crack. So, I'm sure if he gets an opportunity, he'll be great. But most importantly, I think he's got a great future for West Australian cricket.
As it stands, when will you play your first game for the Perth Scorchers?
In Hobart on the 14th of December. Play the A game. That finishes on the 12th. Fly down on the 13th and then play the 14th. So, as you guys know, I absolutely love playing for the Scorchers. It's I've been playing with it for the Scorchers for 10 years, so I love that group of men, love our coaching staff, love the whole organisation. So can't wait to get back in the Orange.
What about Tymal Mills announced today? We got the news last night that he was going to be announced to join your team. Is he going to excite and thrill the fans?
Yeah, look, I think we're extremely lucky at such late notice to get a signing like him. You look at his record over the last 12 to 18 months across all formats of T20 cricket. It's pretty incredible. So anyone that can bowl 145 k's an hour and also has an unbelievable back of the hand slower ball. Hopefully he goes well and hopefully he enjoys playing for the Scorchers.
He's the left arm Mitch Johnson replacement, isn't he, mate? At that sort of speed, pretty much.
Yeah, I put my hand up to Bogey and said that I won't be facing him in the net, so I've got that out and clear to the coach.
I faced Mitch once out there, Carl.
Oh, mate, he was bowling half rat power.
Couldn't get through me, so I don't know what all the talk is about. Now, Mitch, prior to the World Cup, Glenn Maxwell was talking you up about how well you're hitting the ball. Can you just explain the net sessions when you're preparing for those big T20 internationals, what they look like and how hard you go with some of the hitting?
Yeah, training for T20 cricket is always a lot of fun. We were very lucky with all the facilities in Dubai. We had basically open nets in the middle, so it's nice to replicate sort of batting out in the middle and same for bowlers to bowl out in the middle. And I guess the good part about that is that you get to see how far your sixes go. So often when you're batting in the nets, you can absolutely smack one and the bowlers think it's out. So it's nice when you're clearing the ropes that they've got no excuses. So they're plenty of fun.
Now, just tell me before I let you go, what was the first thing you did when you got out of quarantine?
First thing I did, yeah. Sean picked me up.
Yeah.
We went to John Street Cafe in Cottesloe for a nice coffee.
Yeah.
And went and got a haircut.
Yeah. You sound like Daniel Sturridge.
And then I may have slid down to the OBH for a little Diet Coke, gents.
Oh, yes.
In the beautiful West Australian sun. Look at the ocean and have a nice cold one. It was fantastic.
All right. Well, hopefully we can catch up for a cold one in the next couple of weeks. Good on you, mate. Well done. Congratulations. And good to see you up and about. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Mitch Marsh, My Place, Australia-made and supported home smart control system. You can't beat Australian smarts. We need a clearer commitment on the other side. Come back. Your calls, 133-882. If you would like to join us tonight here on Sports Day, Nicole Livingston, the General Manager of Women's Football. The AFLW season was launched today. The fixtures are out. We'll have a chat to her soon.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Let's hit the calls and we are going to start. 133-882 is the number if you would like to join us. Perry in Bayswater is going to be first. G'day, Perry.
G'day, Carl. Mate, I was just listening to you guys about the rain over there. I went running back 11, 12 years ago. Mate and I flew over there a couple of times and got caught and flew back. The meetings were cancelled because of the rain. And it reminds me of that ad they used to have. You know, that promotion, wonderful one day, perfect the next.
Yeah.
We called it raining one day, pissing the next.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think? Do you reckon they should, if they thought about it quickly, flip it over or not? Do you think that that's un-Australian?
Mate, look, I'm here playing around with my engine and putting things together. But you're right. I don't understand. I'd like to know the statistics of the amount of cricket matches, test matches that have started over there that haven't, more than a couple of days. And they normally don't get a result. There's so many. I think, why don't they just start over here with the driest state first and then play the rest later on in the year? There's always a problem with rain in Brisbane this time of the year. Always.
We do love playing there because...
I don't know if you know the statistic. You tell me. I don't know. I don't know the statistic. I've never bothered to look up.
Well, no, we're really beaten there.
Every time.
And that's why we love playing
at the
Gabba.
Record, yeah.
Yeah, because it's bouncy and they come in, the tourists, and they're not used to that sort of wicket, and we get a really good advantage from the get-go because recently it was changed. We went to South Australia before and that was the big argument.
It's a road.
But
it's bouncy here. So the argument about their wicket being bouncy is no more than our wicket being bouncy.
As I said before, if you could categorically tell me that forecast will come true and that they will not get a result in that game, and they knew that 100%, which you're never going to know, then yes, absolutely. But you've been around for a long time checking weather forecasts and 7 days out and 6 days out. Are they absolutely 100% correct?
The point I'm making to you is that regardless of your scenario, If you don't want that scenario to happen, to take a chance, what I'm saying is don't take that chance. And what you're doing is you're going to be able to execute a 5-test series. You're going to be able to hopefully get 5 days play to kick off that series to give it a good start. You are going to get packed crowds. If it's the first test here and it's a live test and we've got a venue here like this state-of-the-art facility, are people going to turn up, given we haven't had any test cricket here for the last... Mate, it's a no-brainer.
No-brainer. They would get more than at the game.
If I'm the head of Cricket Australia right now, I'm telling everyone that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing, but I'm not the head of Cricket Australia. But if you've got any common sense, then that's what they should be doing, without doubt. So anyway, I'll get off my high horse. What else has happened today, Hayes? Because we've harped on about that quite a bit. Practice at Bathurst today. I tell you what, there's some bingles in there, a couple of prangs on the mountain, which at a couple of times today they had to have the red flag out to clear up the track. They've got things going, so the boys out of Triple Eight did pretty well today. What else?
Mitch Clark from the Perth Wildcats. He's been added to the development player roster.
You've pumped him up.
He was good when he got his opportunity through injury. He got that opportunity, showed that he could play. A bit of a cult figure there too. So another good young player coming through for the Perth Wildcats.
And what about the WTA Tour? This morning, the big news that overnight, the chairman, Steve Simon, has suspended all tournaments in China over the safety of Chinese player in Peng Shui and the allegations of sexual assault against a powerful politician there. That's a big statement, isn't it?
It is. It's a strong stance. And it is leadership when we know what has been going on and they can't guarantee the conditions of which Peng Shui is held under at the moment, to give up a lot of money that comes with that. We know how big China is and the money-making machine it can be for sport. To make that call, the right call, I believe, sends a great message, and all the players are behind it.
And the other big news, Hayes, is the massive sea and air search that's been going on all day today since 10 o'clock last night. Victorian jockey Chris Caserta, who was going for a late night swim with an apprentice by the name of Amy Graham, who was pulled from the water. He's still not been found, sadly, and it's not looking good, unfortunately, for him.
No, it's not. Good jockey, promising jockey on the rise as well, and you never want to see that with a person with his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah, only 26 years of age. He left Victoria to seek further opportunities up there in Queensland. He was getting those, but still the search goes on for him. Now, we need to clear a commitment. Oh, and the other news too, Cracker's birthday party over there in Victoria, 130 people, and now we've heard Ron Barassi has COVID-19. We're going to have a chat to Nicole Livingston next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Let's get to Nicole Livingston. The AFLW fixtures were launched today and Nicole is the General Manager of Women's Footy. It's nice to have her on the program again. Welcome, Nicole. How are you going?
I'm very, very good. I'm relieved we've got our fixture out and all steam ahead now to the AFLW.
Have you been a little bit nervous, though, up until this point? Have you had to tinker with things a little bit? How has it really been? Come on.
Well, you know, the original tinker is moving it to January, right? So we had identified starting in December, a little clearer, being able to wrap the season up before the AFL competition comes in, so we didn't have to, you know, have fans choosing between men's and women's football. And, you know, the first tinkering was moving that to January. So, look, I think the thing that we've learned over the last couple of years, and it's not just in sport, it's business, it's community, everybody has to be able to be adaptable. And, you know, footy finds a way, you know that. You've been part of that this year with an amazing grand final in the men's competition in WA. So, women's footy is finding a way, and just pleased that we've got the fixture out rounds 1 to 9 of 10 home and aways for 2022.
Nicole, yesterday the NBL released their policy around COVID and what happens if a player does contract COVID. They need at least 8 players to continue. What about for the AFLW players? Has that been spoken about, that if there is COVID and an outbreak within the team, what is going to be the number for that game to persist with?
Yeah, we've certainly talked about thresholds, and one of the things that we've put in place this year is whilst our clubs have 30 players on their list and our on-field is 16 plus 5, we've actually got another 10 train-on players that are working with each of the 14 clubs throughout the pre-season, so they can be elevated as train-on players if necessary. So a lot of discussion has gone around that. We have a 10-week home and away, 3-week finals. It's a short and sharp season. So we do want to protect the season whilst also doing the right thing by our players, our clubs and the broader community as well. So our preference is to get these games away, but we'll do it safely. And if we need to elevate players from train-ons, then we'll look to do that. But in terms of those exact specifics, we've still got 5 weeks to go. So I guess whilst we're planning, we're also just waiting for the moment.
The border restrictions here in the West make it quite difficult to put a fixture together. We know that. Fremantle play their first 2 games here. West Coast, their first 3. Then they're on the road for 3 weeks. Are they travelling all together for that whole 3-week period where they're outside of Western Australia? And how was that received by both clubs?
Well, we've been in really constant contact with both Fremantle and West Coast to work through what their individual needs were. And you're right, the 2 different clubs sort of requested different periods of time back at home. I look at Fremantle, and as an example, they've got a lot of teachers as players because our players are still part-time as well. So, you know, there was discussion around, well, this is when the school year starts. It'd be great to be able to be, you know, at least back for the teachers. So they'll be on the road once they get there initial games away in WA, they'll be on the road for about 15 to 16 days. And during that period of time, they'll get three games completed. So we've got very, very good, strong, robust protocols around the competition and also a really strong testing regime as well. So that's something we're definitely heavily investing in to protect, again, the players, the clubs and the wider community.
One fixture that caught my eye was GWS playing Fremantle at Fremantle Oval, round two, so January 16. How is that possible with the Giants getting into WA at that particular stage?
So we have been working really closely with the WA government, with WAPOL and also the government itself and the CHO. So we've been able to put some arrangements in place and, you know, again, we're 5 weeks away. So if we need to discuss further what those arrangements might be able to be tweaked or changed or tinkered, using your language, to be able to, again, keep not only the players safe but the community, then we'll do that. But, you know, again, we're 5 weeks away. We've got a very robust testing regime, which also includes the vaccination side of things with all of our playing group and staff as well. So that, from a compliance point of view, is all up to speed.
What about the pay bracket for all the players this year? Have we seen an increase across the board?
Yeah, we have. We've had an increase year on year. We're at the last year of a three-year CBA. And that CBA has seen not only the seasons get longer by a week in the home and away, and our finals are now 3 weeks. So we started in 2017 with just 6 home and away rounds. So we're now at 10 and 3, and there has been uplift in pay. So there's a new CBA that will be negotiated for season 7 onwards. And we actually have 18 clubs starting in season 7 as well, with the last 4 licences having been awarded. So it's pretty exciting. It takes the playing group from 420 to 540, which is just phenomenal. To think 6 years ago, we didn't have any women players that were contracted by AFL clubs to play football.
And the early negotiations of that CBA, is it looking positive for a big payday when they do get to the table?
So our focus is very much on delivering the 2022 season and making sure that not only the home and aways occur, but we move into that finals and award a premier. So we will be negotiating in the coming months, but right now our focus is on the season.
Just one thing for me, Nicole, and we've had a scenario which you would know, I'm sure, well and truly about, is our West Australian Football League reserves competition. We've got, of course, our amateur and community football competition, and we've got our AFLW competition, but none of the seasons are aligned. I think that one of the areas that needs a massive amount of work is trying to align the whole growth pathways for women's footy. Is there any chance that you can see that, you know, the waffle and the amateurs and the community footy and AFL can all be aligned at some stage in the not too distant future, particularly when we're going to have every club involved in the AFL?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought process. I mean, we're certainly trying to find some clear air for AFLW to be able to build, to not have AFL fans choosing between men's and women's football. One of the things I will say, with those 420 players that we have on contract right now, I mean, they've finished their football commitments from a playing point of view at the elite game, and we want them to play their best footy at the elite game and really save it up for there once they get to that level, is that then we have 420 ambassadors, coaches, you know, they're out into the community and inspiring young girls and women and men as well, and normalising football, for women playing football, that is. So whilst I do hear often people talking about the need to align community and AFLW, AFLW actually plays nicely into that period of time where women and girls are registering for football at community level. So they see their heroes on tally, just like I did when I was a little girl, seeing, you know, the swimmers that I wanted to be like, and then they'll go and sign up for a club. So, you know, there is some method in that to be able to stimulate registration, but also to be able to have our AFLW players play a role in being much more visible through the community season. We haven't got to do that at the moment because of COVID for the last 2 years, but that's definitely something that we would like to try to work through.
Well, I suppose the hardest part is for those train-on players and those that don't get a game is they don't actually have a game to play because there is no reserves competition going alongside.
Yeah, most of those train-ons are either in an under-18. There's not too many 17-year-olds on that train-on group. In fact, they need to be nominated for the draft, so I need to actually correct myself on that, so they must be 18. But they're either playing in a state league competition or, you know, they have been part of an AFLW club and potentially haven't been retained. So, yeah, there are other ways for them to... And they've started their state league. Many of them have started their state league preparation as well. So at least that state league timing for training and pre-season seems to be a fairly similar time frame.
Nicole, a few months back on the back of the grand final here in the West, I floated the idea of the women's grand final being permanently moved maybe here to Optus Stadium. Do you think there'd be an appetite for that? And do you think in time as the game grows that it could become a feasible idea?
You had a smile on your face then, didn't you, when you said the AFL Grand Final in the West?
Yeah.
It was fantastic to watch, to see WA host the AFL Grand Final. Right now, we are forging our own traditions, and whilst there's a lot of interest in the AFLW Grand Final, right now, in 2022, it's the highest finishing team in the home and away that make it through to the Grand Final that have the right to host. Whether or not we continue to do that in years moving forward, that's yet to be seen. But certainly this year, that's what we're doing. And some of those great moments have been either, you know, heading off to Adelaide Oval or heading off to Icon Park for the Bulldogs win in the grand final. So at the moment, we're forging our own traditions. You guys have to finish. You have to finish top and you have to get into the grand final. Then we can come across and be at one of your beautiful venues.
Well, if we weren't on the road for 3 weeks, we probably would, but that's a different story. And it's not your fault. We know that. But who wins? Who do you think is the favourite going into this season?
Oh, look, there's so many good teams in there. You know, Melbourne have been in the hunt for such a long time, and I see Brisbane had been in the hunt and then finally won it last year. Look, I'm proud that women's footy is going to lead it out in 2022 because so many people are waiting for football to come back and to have women's footy in the summer holidays and people coming back. You know, I'm going to say it every time that football, women's football's the winner.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
I'll leave you with that corny line.
Yeah, that's
you.
Fine. Take care. Good on you. Nicole Livingston joining us here on Sports Day, General Manager of Women's Footy. And it is nice to hear that the competition is going to get underway and that we're going to expand the competition. But the only thing that concerns me is alignment and allowing those girls that are fighting for a spot to be able to play some footy alongside. I think that in the future, that is how I would like to see the structure evolve so that, you know, all the girls are playing at the same time. I understand that gives the top girls a chance to go out and promote the game, but they can do that during a season, I feel, anyway.
Are you set on the current spot for AFLW? So it was due to be in December and we get more teams, four more teams next year, so it's going to have to start early December through this period. Are you set on that?
Yeah, look, I do think that it needs to be, well, it has to be in the summer. Otherwise, it's not going to get the breathing space that it needs in what is a very busy winter schedule. And you've got to consider that there's NRL and there's AFL and these popular sports. Whilst we've got that on the West Coast with AFL, we've got to remember that in a couple of those markets they're trying to break into up there in Queensland and New South Wales, that this is the time to sort of strike. So from a women's footy perspective, where the growth in the game is, particularly in those northern states of Australia,
I'd be open to seeing it starting the bye round of the men's final series. So they would then have a big kickoff, and then you're not competing against all the teams because from that moment on, you've only got two games, and then, of course, the grand final. So you could do that. Maybe have a week off for the grand final and then continue on through those end of the winter months.
We need a clear commitment on the other side. We'll come back and we will tell you what's coming up after 7 o'clock here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Hope you're enjoying the program. Now, after the 7 o'clock news, we're going to cross over to Richard Garcia in advance of the Perth Glory match against Melbourne Victory on Sunday. Liam Santamaria is an NBL expert. He will predict what is going to happen in the upcoming NBL season. Of course, our Perth Wildcats in action tomorrow night here at RAC Arena. And it'll be nice to have a chat to Robert Thompson, who is a jockey that retired a couple of days ago, to reflect on his career. We'll do our chase for charity. Stay with us after the news. It's coming up next here on 882 6PR.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and we kick off this hour with Richard Garcia, our Perth Glory coach. G'day, Richard. How are you going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, guys.
Now, I've got an SMS here from Phil. He says, is Daniel Sturridge playing this weekend? I said, well, I'll ask the coach.
Look, no, we're going to continue with the plan and getting fit and try and get him up to speed and make sure that we do the right thing by Daniel and make sure that he's ready to play full football.
Has he had any setbacks, Richard, or is it just precautionary?
No, it's more just gaining fitness. I mean, you know, he's sort of in the midst of a pre-season, so, you know, sort of you don't really want to send a player out without doing a semi-pre-season, and that's what we're in the middle of doing now, you know, trying to work him hard while he's over here and get him up to speed so that, you know, he can get back into full games as soon as possible.
Without him, you've been more than competitive, but only 1 point to show so far from the two games. What's been your summary across the first two?
Look, I think, you know, we're definitely a team who has been without competitive games in the pre-season. Obviously, not being able to travel has been a hard part for us in pre-season. But, you know, the improvement from the first week to last week was a massive one. So it was a big leap and, you know, we're heading in the right direction and the guys are starting to take on board what we want. So, yeah, very pleased with the way we're progressing. Now it's about, you know, taking the results when we put in those performances.
Well, let's face it, you were ripped off. Have you had any response? it needs to get better. Have you had any response around that scenario? I mean, are we going to see a situation where the technology is better or at least used in these sorts of scenarios? Because we can't have that sort of stuff unfolding, to be perfectly honest, in your game.
Oh, I definitely agree. I think it's something that definitely needs to improve. The technology is there. It's about having the amount of cameras that you need at a game and to use it well. And I think that's probably something that we need to get better as a league, is to either invest in that technology or you know, you know, find a way to use it more efficiently.
Richard, any update on Brandon O'Neill and how he's going with his partner?
Look, he keeps giving us updates that she's ready to go, but yeah, I think that's more his excitement on both the baby and a possible chance to get back out there and play. But no, look, I think it's a hard situation for himself. You know, he wants to be there for the birth of the first baby, and you know, for us it's also a difficult one, not being able to have him fly in and out. You know, we're sort of stuck here and really can't have people flying in and out.
Are we talking about a C-section here, Richard, or a natural birth? Because I must say, my wife got rushed in for an emergency C-section. We were in and out and had our daughter Emily, and there was this poor lady who was laying there on one of those round rubber balls when I went in, and when I came out she was still laying there, and she was laying there for the next half a day.
I think they have investigated everything. So I think, you know, they've left it in the hands of the doctor. So, yeah, look, I'm sure it'll come either way. So I wish them the best with that.
Now, we've got to keep our sense of humour, because for you, you're going to have to, what looks like, endure a fairly lengthy road trip. Do you know exactly what it looks like? Because I was reading some articles this week that you may well be on the road until something like January 15.
It could virtually end up that way. At the moment, we're looking into areas and ways that we could possibly get back into WA. At the moment, you know, we've got to be out of Victoria for 2 weeks, and we're looking into possibly trying to move into Queensland to get an exemption to be in a bubble sort of situation in Queensland, and then hopefully get these guys back for Christmas so that they can spend some time with their family, because it looks like at this point we probably will be on the road. We'll probably be back on the road on the 1st of January, and then, you know, who knows when we'll be allowed back in again. So that's sort of, you know, something that's playing on the group's minds a little bit. You know, they're sort of, you know, they've really accepted the challenge of being over here, but it's always hard when you don't know what's coming in the future.
Just got to get those first 3 points against Melbourne Victory, hopefully. And look, you should know them pretty well. A lot of players that you would have coached that have gone across to the Melbourne Victory. What have you found across their start? Two games, two wins. Of course, Tony Popovich is the new coach there, and he started pretty well.
Yeah, they've had a great start to the season. You know, and in games that probably could have gone either way, which is fantastic for us. You know, I think the way we're growing and the way we're getting better and better every week is a real positive. So, you know, we'll be looking to get that 3 points against them on Sunday.
So knowing his style and knowing a few of the players, is that helpful or is that sometimes a bit of a hindrance when you go into a game like this?
Look, I think, you know, they probably know just as much about us as we do about them. So it works both ways. I'm sure it'd be a great game and, you know, it's one that we're looking to win.
And having a look at the next couple of games, I know that you don't like to look too far ahead, but you've got Melbourne City following in the next 3 days on the Wednesday, and you did say that you do have to get out of Melbourne. When you're in that environment over there in Victoria, are you restricted in what you can do? Is that just part of what it looks like whilst you're in there for those next few days?
At the moment, we don't really have the restrictions. I think we're putting the restrictions on ourselves to make sure that we are doing everything possible for the boys to be able to, you know, have an opportunity to get back home for Christmas. And that means, you know, the guys sticking close to the hotel and being sensible when they're out and about, that, you know, they are, you know, wearing masks and making sure that they're following all protocols. So it's something that we have spoken to the boys about and making sure that they're in the best mindset to be able to perform as well as give us the best opportunity to be able to get home.
And there's so much focus on Daniel Sturridge and when he's going to be playing for the Perth Glory. What about the rest of the group? Is there any other fitness concerns with the rest of the group? Are they all ready and raring to go?
No, look, we've had an injury to Brad Jones, so that's a hard one to take. You know, Brad pulled up sore and has hurt his calf. So we'll be out for a little while with that one. So we've brought in another goalkeeper in Nick Soros, a young guy from Sydney. So he'll join us to come in. But other than that, the squad's looking not too bad. We've still got the likes of Andy Keogh, who's back in Perth, and a few others that are left back in Perth. So we're looking pretty good when we get back from this road trip that, you know, everyone will be back and fit and firing.
And it was only a couple of weeks ago that you took on Melbourne Victory. And I know that you fielded a really young side and you lost in penalties. It was a great competitive match. Hayes and I were sitting here at Sports Day watching that game unfold. Were you reasonably satisfied with what the young blokes dished up that night?
Definitely. I think for their first appearance, it was excellent. You know, that's something that we've always maintained, that we want to try and give these guys a chance and make sure that they have an opportunity to show what they're made of. And they definitely did that the other night. They were exceptional, I thought, and especially for their first hit out. As a lot of those guys were, you know, under the age of 18. So that's a fantastic effort from those young guys. And it's credit to not only the youth team coaches in our system, but also to those players that are really, you know, starting to take those chances and starting to believe in themselves.
Richard, life without Diego Castro has been such a big part of the offence of this team for so long. Is there an adjustment period with not having him out there now?
There definitely is. I think, you know, Diego is such a fantastic player that, you know, if you take him out of any team, there's going to be an adjustment period. But it's about us finding our new selves and, you know, letting players like Adrian Sardinero and Daniel Sturridge come back into the lineup and get fit. And then we will be a different look, Perth Glory.
Good luck, mate. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys.
And that match against Melbourne Victory is going to kick off at 3:45 p.m. on Sunday. So make sure that you tune in. Get behind our Perth Glory for Toolkit Depot. Top brands, ultimate range, pro service. We'll get to Liam Santa Maria next, NBL expert and commentator, to preview the NBL season, which is getting underway tomorrow night.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Let's get into our NBL season preview. And Liam Santa Maria joins us. He is an NBL expert and commentator, and he has joined us previously. And we love his work. And I would love to know exactly who he's going to tip to win the championship after having a look at the Blitz. Under no pressure, Liam, but how are you going, mate?
I'm good. Thanks, fellas. I'm excited. Tip off for opening night is just around the corner. It's going to be a massive, excuse me, NBL season. Just so much talent on display across the league, a lucrative broadcast deal, a whole bunch of guys who are going to be trying to make next year's NBA draft, and as you alluded to right there, 10 teams who are all going to try to hoist that trophy.
All right, the newest team is going to kick off the season, the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers against Brisbane. How do you think this one's going to pan out?
I would love for the Jack Jumpers to come up trumps in their historic debut, but I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to be a tough season for the Jack Jumpers, always tough as an expansion team, and this Bullets team is actually sneaky good. Nathan Sobey, of course, off the Boomers bronze medal campaign. He's in for a big season. Lamar Patterson's looking good ahead of the start of the regular season. And I like their new import, Robert Franks, as well. So I think the Bullets might win in the season's first game.
It's the Wildcats taking on the Adelaide 36ers, who took out the NBL Blitz. What have you made of them under CJ Bruton?
They've been good. Really haven't put a foot wrong so far. But I'm a little suspect on the kind of competition they've had to this point. The Wildcats, we know, they're still getting used to their new head coach and getting used to all their new pieces. And they've got a bunch of injuries. And they also played a couple of games in the preseason, Adelaide against Cairns and Tassie, some teams that we don't necessarily think are going to have massive seasons. So, couple of big tests for them in the opening round, and there's none bigger than taking on the Wildcats in RAC Arena in front of the Red Army. So they're up against it, and it'll be good to see them really properly tested in this opening round, Adelaide.
Are you concerned at all for the Perth Wildcats with those injuries? Mitch Norton missing up to 5 weeks, Todd Blanchfield back at training but won't play tomorrow night. Is that of concern, given particularly Mitch Norton brings that defensive pressure?
Definitely huge outs. I mean, Mitch Norton, two-time championship-winning point guard, and so important to that team. And Bryce Cotton, he just plays a lot better when he has that guy next to him. You know, Mitch Norton these days, it was Damian Martin prior to that, a guy who can handle the ball, run the offense, and, you know, get the work done defensively as well. So a lot now falls back on Bryce. New import Vic Law, who's going to be spectacular this season. But with that raucous Red Army behind them, I think they'll get a win on opening night.
Now, how have you seen the role of Bryce Cotton? It looks like it's changed, and he hasn't been the prolific scorer that we've known him to be. There's been quite a few others through the blitz that have got numbers better than him, particularly when hitting the scoreboard.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you're a three-time MVP and an absolute super-duper star of the league, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to know whether he's getting out of second gear in preseason. He knows the real stuff's right around the corner, and he doesn't need to necessarily light up the scoreboard in preseason. Great to see him back out there healthy, of course, having missed the last part of last season with that emergency thigh surgery he had to have. So that's a big tick. And you're right, it's interesting because new coach, new system, everything revolved around Bryce under Trevor Gleeson. And it's maybe a little less so under Scott Morrison, maybe a little bit more of a kind of an equal opportunity offensive system. But make no mistake, Bryce is just so quality that he's going to get plenty of the rock. He's going to get plenty of numbers. And when push comes to shove towards the end of close games, the ball will be in his hands.
One game on Saturday, the Phoenix take on the New Zealand Breakers. Hard to probably work out how good the Breakers are going to be, but normally very competitive. Who wins this one?
I think the Phoenix win this one. I think they're going to have a massive season, South East Melbourne. And the Breakers, they've had a very disrupted preparation. COVID hitting their travelling group over the past week and a half. So a couple of players afflicted. Their head coach is still recovering from getting knocked around. He actually won't be leading the team on Saturday night. Their assistant coach will have to step up. So that's a lot to overcome, especially on the road against a genuine title contender in the Phoenix.
All right, Liam, give us your top four. Who's going to play off in the playoffs?
The Wildcats will be there, fellas. We know that. Lock them in. You can lock them in, year out. I think Melbourne United will be back there as well. Some others don't feel that way, but the defending champs, I think Matthew Dellavedova is going to be good for them this season, and Dean Vickerman's just a legendary coach. So they'll be in the mix. And I think Illawarra and South East Melbourne, Brian Gorgian's Hawks, will build on what they did last season. And the Phoenix, they are stinging from bouncing out of the semi-finals last year after having Melbourne United, the eventual champions, on the rope. So I've got the Phoenix, the Wildcats, the Hawks and United in the top four.
Just on Illawarra, of course, they play Adelaide on Sunday, and that's after they take on Perth here, which will make it interesting itself. But obviously with the COVID situation there and the new regulations that were brought in yesterday, what did you make of those? So making sure that every single roster has to have at least eight players, otherwise that's the only way that you can see a game postponed.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, the NBL is being proactive to try to avoid situations where, teams will be looking to have games rescheduled. You know, we don't want to do that. We want to put the schedule in place, let the fans buy the tickets, and then motor on through. So they're putting in rules to say, all right, if you have one or two guys that test positive, let's isolate them. Let's hopefully you're in a state where that allows close contacts to be able to test negative and then get on with their business. And if you have to get someone else in to bolster your roster to take the floor, then so be it. Let's put in some rules to allow that to happen. So I like it from the NBL, kind of getting ahead of the ball.
Liam, the basketball fans, they love ESPN's top 100 for the NBA draft, the rankings. And I know you're a part of this. There's some tough names in there, so I'm going to let you go through this. But Luke Travers, he's for now at 89 on the list. Plenty of talent here in Australia. There could be a chance to enter the NBA draft.
For sure, yeah. And this top 100 that you're alluding to is put together by the two kind of leading draft analysts, really, on the planet over there in the United States, Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz. So these are very highly credentialed analysts, and they have eight guys who are set to compete in the NBL this season inside the top 100 as we approach the start of the regular season for next year's draft. So, of course, as we know, only 60 end up actually getting drafted, but you've got to get on those draft boards at this point so you can start to get people's attention, get NBA scouts and assistant coaches and the like, front office executives tune into your games. And Luke Travers has done that. What a spectacular story. This is a guy who started off as a development player in the NBL and has worked himself up now to be right in that conversation. So Usman Dieng and Hugo Besson from New Zealand, Ariel Hutt-Porty for Melbourne United, Tom Digbo for Brisbane. We mentioned Travers, Mojave King for Adelaide, Nikita Mikhailovsky for Tasmania, and Makua Maker for the Sydney Kings, all inside the top 100 as we motor towards opening night.
Liam, love your work, mate. Thank you for joining Hayes and I and giving us your thoughts on the start of the competition. We look forward to it getting underway tomorrow. Take care.
Good to chat, fellas.
Liam Santa Maria there, NBL expert and commentator with his predictions on the upcoming season. And remember, 6:30 tomorrow, Perth versus Adelaide. I think there's still a couple of tickets left too for $20 if you want to go along and get behind our Perth Wildcats here at RAC Arena. We'll clear a break on the other side, come back and have a chat to Robert Thompson, retiring jockey who is a legend of his sport.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. And within 2 weeks, we've had two of the greats of racing retire. Last week, we had a chat to Glenn Boss on this program. This week, we're having a chat to Robert Thompson, who at the age of 63 has hung up the saddle. His first ride was back in April of 1973. His first winner was at Wyong, also in the month of April in 1973. Holds the Australian record for career wins, Hayes, of 4,447.
Let's put that in perspective, because Damien Oliver was about 2,400.
Yeah.
And who we regard as one of the greats.
Well, Damien Oliver's 49 years of age. This bloke spent 49 years in the saddle. So Damien Oliver wasn't even born when he started racing. Robert Thompson, welcome to the program and congratulations, mate, on a wonderful career. How come you decided to pull up stumps and hang up the saddle?
Oh, mate. 49 years of it, and I'm 63 now, I think. Yeah, I've had my fun in the sun, so it's time to ride off into the sunset now.
Bit disappointing you couldn't get to 50 years.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, not to worry. 49 was good enough.
Now, there's an old bloke by the name of Dashing Danny Miller over here. Have you ever crossed paths with him in your career?
Yes, yeah, yeah. I've had a few trips to Western Australia to ride and all that, and always run into Dean, for sure.
Now, he was a bloke that didn't want to retire, and they reckon he was deaf and they couldn't hear, or he couldn't hear, so he was actually medically forbidden from continuing to race, but you were still physically okay, I believe.
Yeah. All in full tack, yeah. No worries about that, yeah. Still fit and healthy, but now's the time to... Time to hang up the saddle.
How difficult has it been since COVID? Because I believe one of the biggest things that you've always had to do throughout your career, Rob, is travel so many distances to race your rides, given that you weren't always riding in the metropolitan area. Was that something that was increasingly difficult during the last couple of years?
Yeah, it definitely was. Definitely was, guys, and all of that. And I was just the last couple of months and all that, I was desperately trying to get up to far north Queensland, which I go every winter and do the carnivals up there, and unfortunately I couldn't get there and all of that, so that really made me mind up that it was time to hang the saddle up.
Hey Robert, a lot of sports, they've changed over the years, particularly over a 49 year period. What about for jockeys? What's been the biggest change across that time from when you first entered the game?
Definitely all the safety area and all of that, you know, plastic running rails now, and wearing the vests and plus all the different riding styles and all that. That's all changed over the years.
And what about looking at your career, over 30,000 rides through that period. And you had a number of opportunities, didn't you, to go to the Metro, but you resisted a few of those opportunities. Why did you do that?
When I first started out, I was apprenticed to my grandfather. I had a couple of uncles that were jockeys and apprenticed to my grandfather. So I was only 14, and apprenticeship runs to you was 21 in those years. And I was still here in Cessnock with him, and then when I came 21, come out of my apprenticeship, my father took over the stables, and it was all a family affair, so it was pretty easy, you know, not to leave.
Is there any regret on that, or you think after your career of 49 years and 4,400 winners across that time that you made the right decision to stay?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It was all a family affair and all that. Dad had 35 to 40 horses in work year in and year out, so no regrets not going to Sydney. I could have went a lot of times, but I used to love going there riding, but couldn't wait to get out of the joint to get back home to hear the Cessnock.
Who did you learn from back there in 1973 as a 14-year-old apprentice, other than your grandfather? Were there some mentors that helped you along the way?
Yeah, most definitely. A chap, no relation, but he was called Jack Thompson. He helped me a hell of a lot, and Hilton Cope and Norm Munsey, all those guys, because when I started and all that, guys, you couldn't watch yourself on TV and all that back in them days, and you was lucky to even have a video of these country tracks. You'd only, if you was in trouble and had to go to the steward's room, you'd only be able to watch yourself coming up the home straight, nowhere else. And those guys helped me a hell of a lot in the early days.
Mate, when you were a 14-year-old apprentice in 1973, I was a 5-year-old mascot running around for my dad's football side. And I remember how we used to get electricity. We used to have a generator, so we had to go and crank up the generator to get power. We were lucky to have black and white TV back then, Tomo. There was no bloody chance of technology. I mean, how sport are the young blokes these days?
Oh, that's dead right and all that. You know, I used to tell the young fellas and all that, I used to work for $9.70 a week, and when I first started riding, I got $15 in a race, and you had to ride at 44.5 kilos or 45. They died when I tell them that.
Yeah, and you're still looking pretty good, Nick. Was weight ever a problem?
Oh yes, yeah. I was always sort of, you know, semi heavyweight jockey and all that. Always used to watch that. The old sweat box was my second home. Don't worry about that, and I spent plenty of hours in that over the years, and so Yeah, I used to have to watch that consistently.
Tell me about 2015, inducted into the Australian Racing Hall of Fame, and also in that same year made a member of the Order of Australia. That must have been a nice year for you.
Yeah, it definitely was. Actually, the night that I was inducted into the Hall of Fame, Glenn Boss was the same night. Both of us went into the Hall of Fame the same night, actually. But, yeah, big thrill. Very big thrill that was, and probably the best winner I've ever rode, you know, getting inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Well, let's talk about some of the horses and the big races. Speaking of big thrills, which one gave you the most across your career?
Well, I was lucky, country boy and all that. I was lucky enough to win 7 Group 1s and all that, and the best horse I ever rode was a horse called Romantic Dream. I was lucky enough to win my first 2 Group 1s on him in Brisbane. As a 2-year-old, he beat horses like Family Man and surrounding those races up there. And actually, guys, I won a Lestier Stakes on him there in Perth.
Few took years our money. Later
when George Hanlon was training at that time.
And when you have a look at, say, the West Australian racing scene these days, I don't know, Tomo, when was the last time you came out here, mate, but be lovely to have you over here at some stage. To see what racing looks like now around the country and around the nation, and given that we've had 2 of our Group 1 races, we're about to have a 3rd, and Willie Pike and Bob and Sandra Peters, you probably would have come across them in your travels too.
Yeah, definitely. They always used to beat me, so nothing's changed. So I'm sure they'll probably win another one again before all the carnival's over. But, yeah, good luck to them. They put a lot of money and hard work into it, so well done to them guys.
Yeah, and they've got the short price favourite in Western Empire to win the Kingston Town Classic, which is going to be raced on Saturday. Hey, mate, it's really been a pleasure to catch up with you for a few minutes tonight on our program. Good luck in retirement. Take care and look after yourself.
Okay, guys, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Good on you. Robert Thompson there, retiring jockey, 63, 49 years in the saddle, 4,447 winners if you've just joined us. He began riding in 1973 as a 14-year-old apprentice and rode, I think, his first winner 8 days later. So that's not a bad effort, is it? And to race over 30,000 races over a distance of 48,000 kilometres, and he travelled in a car to race meetings 9.2 million kilometres. 9.2
legend,
million!
Absolute legend. Remember backing him many a time. He used to be one of my favourites.
Hopefully he came out in front. Now, let's get to David Short. Speaking of coming out in front, he'll hopefully be able to give us some of the latest sports betting odds next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top-brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and let's get into an odds update. It's that time to catch up with Tab Touch's David Short. G'day, Shorty.
Hello, Carl. Nice to be with you, as well as Hayes. How's the night going, boys?
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, it's going really well. And you know what, Shorty? It's getting busier in your world too, mate, because all of a sudden we had no sport and now we've got a truckload of it. Where do you want to start?
Let's go to the cricket, boys. Really excited about, obviously, the test match just around the corner. Can't wait to see the Ashes get underway, the first test market. The Aussies go in at 205, the draw 285, and England 450. There has been a trim up on the draw and England there. The Aussies were as short as 180, so the money's been there outside of them to get the job done early doors. The Big Bash kicks off on Sunday. Sydney Sixers take on the Melbourne Stars, 181. The Sixers with the Stars at $2. And on Monday, it's the Sydney Thunder, 181, Heat, $2. First game for the Scorchers is on the 8th of December. They're $1.60, taking on the Brisbane Heat at $2.35. The market to win the Big Bash, Sydney Sixers $4.25, Scorchers $4.50, Stars at $6, $6.50 and upwards from there.
The NBL, that kicks off tomorrow as well with Tasmania and Brisbane. A big game for the Wildcats against the 36ers tomorrow too.
Absolutely it is. And the Jack Jumpers go into their clash with Brisbane as the outsiders. They're at $2.25, the Bullets $1.64. The Wildcats expected to get their campaign off to a flyer. Go the Mighty Cats. They're $1.38, $3.05 the 36ers. Line betting on that game sits at 6.5. The Wildcats have been covering the line for fun in recent seasons. I'll be jumping on that bandwagon again.
round three of the A-League, Shorty?
A-League action this weekend for the punters. We see Wellington taking on Western Sydney tomorrow. 240 the Phoenix, 360 the draw, 270 for Western Sydney. Perth Glory take on the Melbourne Victory there on the road. Victory 207 favourites, the draw 355 and the Glory at 335.
Now Group 1 Racing returns to Ascot. The last week of the Triple Challenge and Western Empire. I don't reckon I've seen one this short, Shorty, in a main race. $1.35, I think, on Tab Touch. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Bang on the mark, Carlos. And, well, we thought 145 might be a little trim, but we were wrong. The punters are just truckloading this into $1.35 now, if you don't mind. Regal Power on the second line, 5 out to 6. Search and Rocks is $10 and firm. Kiss on All Four Cheeks, just a little bit of money there, 15 into 14. Similar Notorious One, 21 into 18. But, I'd say 95% of the money at the moment, all with Western Empire.
Okay, now let's swing our attention to Saturday night in Cannington.
Yeah, big night of chasing to look forward to out there at Cannington. And, of course, we've got the Road to the Phoenix final. This is something a little bit different, a max race. The winner of this race will go and represent WA with that, the Dogs WA slot in the $750,000 to the winner, the Phoenix. That race is on the 18th of December there at the Meadows. Our Vice Group's been really well backed. Open $1.60, now into $1.36. Fernando Star draws box one. It's the $3 outsider in the match race. Should be a beauty there on Saturday night.
How do we get on?
You can drop into any Tab agency statewide. Head to tabtouch.com.au or call 132368. If you are going to have a punt, be sure to do it responsibly. Enjoy the rest of your night, boys.
Good on you, David Short there. Thanks to Tab Touch. The race starts when the bet's on Tab Touch. Better your bet. Gamble responsibly. Call Gambler's Help on 1800 858 858. Now, let's get into our Chase for Charity, brought to you by Greyhounds WA, and I'm still cussing myself because last week I said for the first time this year I'm going to go right on that little snout of the dog, and guess what? I got rolled by Bones McCoy. It ran third. So if I'd gone each way, I would have raised some money for motor neurone disease. But this man, James Broadhurst, this is brought to you by Greyhounds WA, this little segment. James Broadhurst is the man. 2 out of 2, my friend. Well done. Congratulations. You hit back after I sledged you last week, didn't you?
G'day, guys. Yeah, good to be with you. And what can I say? Look, you know, lightning does strike at least once in your life. So I'll be happy if I can double up with the two winners again this week.
I think you've done it one time before. So good work, James. And I followed you in. And we have a match race coming up between Vice Grip and Fernando Starr. And you have to say Vice Grip has got a good grip on this one.
Oh, absolutely, guys. Look, it's all happening at Cannington on Saturday night, not least of which this match race we've got. Between me and Vice Grip, Fernando Starr. The winner, of course, gets a ticket into the $1 million Phoenix, which is in Melbourne on the 18th of December. But look, the focus is on these two dogs, the last two dogs standing after this Road to the Phoenix series. As you mentioned there, Hayes, Vice Grip does go into this race as favourite. He's on fire at the moment. He's won four of his past six starts, including the All-Star Sprint in those other two races. He's finished second. So form has been without fault for trainer Adam Smithson. And what about the contender here, Fernando Starr? Well, this dog's racing out of his fur at the moment, a veteran with a chase with a lot of experience, and he's going through an Indian summer of form at the moment. He's on fire. The key to this one, guys, is if Fernando Starr is able to get to the lead, I think we've got a race on our hands. If Vice Grip jumps to the front in early stages here, I think it'll all be over. So we're hoping for the contest point of view that Fernando Starr can use the inside draw he's got here and get out to the lead and make this one go down to the wire.
Oh, it's going to be a great spectacle. But that's not all. Two heats of the Anniversary Cup, both very good heats.
Oh, look, they certainly are here, Hayes. In the first heat, we're seeing Valachi go around. This is a young dog we've spoken about before. He returned to form last week with a very nice win. He's coming up against Destruction, which is red hot at the moment. There's West Ombre in this race and Brazil Manelia, another last start winner here out of box one, potentially be a spoiler here. So this is a good heat in the opening one. And in heat two, we've got Momentum and Sir Monty boxed side by side. If we had to boil this race down to two dogs, it would be the battle between these two. Momentum got pipped by Sir Monty a couple of starts back after going in as favourite. Momentum's a really classy young dog on the up. Sir Monty is a littermate of Fernando Starr, and like the littermate, a bit of sibling rivalry here, I think. He's gone, well, Fernando Starr's lifted his rating, so I'm going to have to do the same. So he's in good form at the moment as well. So two really good heats we've got of the Anniversary Cup to complement this match race we've got on Saturday.
All right, before you give your best bets, I've got a doggy bone to pick with you. How come you didn't how come you didn't tip me into Sunday's racing out there at Cannington when the dog that was named after me was actually racing Fired Up Carl out of the McLean kennel? You didn't even tell me. It gets up at wins at $4.40 and we could have raised all that money in the chase for charity, JB. What's going on?
I know. Fired Up Carl. I thought you'd got this dog.
Aren't
you one of the ownership group of this?
Yeah, well, see, what happens is, right, you don't push your button where you put that little black booker where it rings the bell and reminds you, mate, there's just so much going on. Okay, speaking of ringing our bell, come on, ring the bell. You'll be ringing the bell if these two win. Let's start with Friday night at Mandra. Who are you tipping?
Yeah, we certainly will. Let's hope we can follow up the double here. Look, just quickly, guys, are you familiar or... devotees of the TV show Yellowstone?
No, the wife was getting into that, but I couldn't get in myself.
Okay, all right. Well, you have at least heard of it, so that's good, because the best bet that I've got for Mandra on Friday night is apparently named after the lead character in this TV show, John Dutton. So anyone who's involved in that show might want to get on board. Race two, number three for Mandra on Friday night, John Dutton. And he's out of the Steve Withers kennel. And Steve Withers, of course, had a whole lot of success with Tommy Shelby, named after another lead character in a popular show. So they're hoping that they can do the same here. A pretty tough act to follow. But the word from the kennel is that they do have high hopes for this greyhound. And so far, so good. He's 2 from 2. He's run some decent times here over the 405-metre journey and likely to get a good look at this one again. So race two, number three, John Dutton at Mandra on Friday night, and for Cannington on Saturday. I didn't mean to double up with the Steve Withers kennel, but that's how it's played out. I'm going to race two, number two, Great White. Now, guys, we're going to find out whether this dog is... Yeah, that's right. The music's playing. I'm scared already. I'm never getting back in the water again. We are going to find out, though, guys, whether this dog is going to be Jaws or Baby Shark. We're not quite sure yet. Early stages of this greyhound's career. A little bit of a risk here because we haven't seen him race at Cannington yet, but he has had a couple of good efforts down at Mandra. He won his maiden, and then last start he worked his way through a bit of traffic and finished strongly to run second. On the strength of that, I think he'll go well. Hopefully, from an inside draw here, he will get a clearer path to the lead and will win. So that's Great White for me, race two, number two, at Cannington on Saturday.
Thank you, JB. We'll have a chat to you next week.
Good stuff. Thanks, guys.
All right. So Paul Hazelby, you'll be going with JB. Race two, number three at Mandra Friday night, John Dutton. And race two, number two, Great White at Cannington on Saturday. 25 on the nose for you on each of those. And for me, 25 each way. Race 10 tomorrow night down there at Mandra, Carapaz. Number eight, I think, can get the job done for us for our chase for charity and raising as much money as we can for motor neurone disease. We'll finish off after the break with what happened on this day for Barra and O'Day and tell you what's coming up on the show tomorrow.